I'm very happy now to welcome to the Radio Cafe Merle Lefkoff. She's founder and director of the Center for Emergent Diplomacy. And we're joined by Dave Rogers and Zaylee Pollan, who are coordinators of Happiness Santa Fe, which is a project of the Center for Emergent Diplomacy. And there's lots of events coming up. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you very much.
Nice to be here, Mary Charlotte.
So we have talked before about the concept of happiness with John DeGraff and with you, Merle, and the whole idea of happiness as a value as opposed to a kind of hedonism, but a deeper happiness is something that's really getting off the ground, not only as an idea, but as a set of activities that are happening, for example, here in the city of Santa Fe. What's going on?
The concept of happiness, Mary Charlotte, is very intimately tied to the concept of human well-being, and not just human well-being, but the well-being of the earth that we are a part of. That's really the basis of why we started this initiative. That the time has come for us to figure out how to be more resilient, as we know, how to once again care enough about what's happening to our environment, what's happening to our communities, what's happening to our vitality as human beings globally. And I believe, as many of us do, and I think you believe this too, that this begins at home. This begins at what we call the grassroots level and is intimately tied to how we affect public policy so that we can have a happier earth and a population that is healthier and happier.
One of the things that I think it's really important to remind people of is that the association between happiness and consumer goods, and I'll be the first person to say that some consumer goods actually really do make you happy, my favorite example being fleece clothing, but that association is very recent. It's about a century old in our history, and it's part of the whole industrial system, and it's kind of like that's run its course.
I often get asked these days, why is the Center for Emergent Diplomacy thinking about a happiness initiative? And for me, it's an obvious tie-in with the Bretton Woods Conference in 1944 during World War II.
Now, what was that?
This was a big negotiation among 44 countries. This is before the United Nations. Among 44 countries who were trying to figure out how we would have a wonderful world after World War II was over, because the war was coming to an end. And the idea was that people would own their own homes, people would have lots of things to buy to make them happy, and that the economy would be based on very firmly on market capitalism. President Roosevelt, of course, had pulled us out of a Great Depression with a different kind of idea. But the two ideas sort of merged at Bretton Woods. The idea of market capitalism, however, really took over. And it worked for a long time. It worked for a long time. But as we talked about complexity science, as you remember, Mary Charlotte, we talked about positive feedback loops, which is a complexity term, suddenly getting out of control. And here we are, almost 100 years later, 60, 70 years later, with an economy now that is out of control.
I wanted to add on that Bretton Woods is also where they decided to use GDP as a measure, these final goods and services, as a measure of our country's success. And I think that it spurred, and I think all of us were involved in this movement, but that this spurred this entire culture of materialism and consumerism, overconsumption, that is at the root of so many other difficulties and problems happening in society now. I mean, namely, climate change for sure is here, this overconsumption on a finite planet. So this idea that we want to promote happiness, I think some people sometimes have a difficulty with the term, feeling that it's a little bit slight or very personal, very subjective. But in a lot of discussions, it seems to be the best term to cover this idea of well-being and how can we measure things differently. GDP does not include clean air, clean water, community service, volunteerism, connection to other human beings. It does include things like cleaning up oil spills. How do we alter that? How do we get enough people having a conversation about other things that matter in our lives to make that a viable measuring tool?
And another thing, and this comes from some of John DeGraff's earlier work, is just time. Having time as a measure of happiness.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So what are some of the... So we're not talking about clean air and clean water when we talk about happiness. How do we change our world so that the things that many of us, most of us, probably value the most, which really... when it comes down to it, probably isn't money, except to the extent that money buys some sort of basic comforts. But how do
fleeting
we work
happiness.
Those?
It buys fleeting happiness.
Well, it buys you a certain amount of, like if you can pay your rent, then you're free from that stress, for example. But it's not the money itself. It's just being able to pay your rent or being able to pay your utility bills. But how do you start incorporating real happiness, for lack of a better word, into kind of the structure of our lives?
Well, you're right, Mary Charlotte. A lot of folks, I think Americans especially, given our media and the advertising culture, the consumption culture that we have been inflicted upon us for so many years, we've got kind of a disjointed vision of what happiness actually is. A lot of it is materialistic. You know, and there's been interesting research done in happiness over the last several years that shows, for instance, that financial security is an element of happiness, but only up to a point.
Right.
And beyond that point, it will not make you any happier than you are, you know, when you're making 70 or 80,000 a year and everything's handled.
Yeah, wasn't that the number, like $75,000
right.
a year?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
above that?
Above that, you're no happier than you are.
Right.
And up to that point, you will be happier in certain ways. You'll have less stress, as you mentioned, and that sort of thing. But there's a lot of elements to it. We're using a survey as part of our happiness initiative that was created by a group in Seattle, who was really the first city in America to venture into happiness. And we're linking with them to further this survey to bring it to Santa Fe as well. They generated 10 different domains that are recognized by the Bhutanese approach and by happiness scientists, and now happiness science is emerging as a very interesting area of psychology.
Before you get into those 10 domains, Merle, tell us about Bhutan. I mean, you just mentioned the Bhutanese. What are we talking about?
Well, Bhutan is a tiny Himalayan kingdom near Tibet and Nepal. And the first democratically elected prime minister of Bhutan was one of the leaders there in the kingdom who said, let's come into the modern world now that we're moving toward democracy, because it's still a kingdom, still has a king, but they have a parliament now, and they're in transition toward democracy.
Voluntarily. Nobody chopped off any heads.
Nobody chopped off any heads. And the people love their king. So it's a slow transition to democracy. When they looked at what were the good things about democracy, they looked at elections and how people could get involved in their government. When they looked at the things that didn't work so well, one of them was the market capitalist model of democracy, democratic capitalism that seemed to be failing around the world. So they said, we're not going to do an economic development plan. We're going to do a plan to bring human development and well-being to Bhutan at the same time that we come into the modern age. So it's quite remarkable.
And so what does that actually look like there?
Oh, they're definitely in transition. They're only about halfway on the happiness index. There is a global happiness index now. As David said, there's a huge science of happiness that's just... really emerging now around the world. Lots of people and lots of universities looking at happiness. They're about halfway now. They're a very poor country. They haven't reached that level that David was talking about in terms of relieving the stress of having to put food on the table and a roof over your head and meaningful work. And meaningful time. They do care a great deal about time, which Zaylee mentioned earlier, a great deal about time with their families and time in their little villages. So that's happening. They also have a big refugee problem, and that's a political problem for them. They're not handling it very well. So it's a mixed bag, but they're really on to something.
Let's talk about getting back to Dave Rogers, the domains of happiness and this whole happiness science.
Mm. It's quite interesting how it's emerging. In the specifically in the survey that we're presenting for our folks to take.
You're going to have people here in Santa Fe take a happiness survey?
Right. The survey is online on our website. Now, I'll go through the points here real quick. These 10 different domains, and these are ones that are used in the survey that we're examining to find out sort of levels of happiness that each person that takes the survey has. Financial security, of course, we spoke about that. Time balance, environmental quality, education, access to arts and culture, social connections, friends and family all, confidence in our government, and that's every level of government, physical health, mental health, and satisfaction with what we do for work. Now, I think it's very interesting, personally, that nowhere on this list does anything about what we possess, about our material goods, our cool cars, our
right.
great houses,
Fleece
our nice
clothing.
Clothes, right. nowhere does that exist on there. And there's an interesting sort of a sidelight I want to mention. That is, several years ago, the National Geographic did a survey, a happiness survey, and they surveyed 40,000 Americans, a lot of people. And the one thing that they discovered that all of the people that were the happiest in that survey had in common was every single one of them watched an hour or less of television a day. All right?
The more TV, the less happy?
The less happy. And
wow.
You wonder, well, why is that? Well, I think we've talked about this, and there's a couple of reasons, and it has to do with this material culture.
Yeah.
On the one hand, television is showing you all the things that you're supposed to have to make you a complete and fulfilled, happy person. And they're all material things. And second thing that they do is they tell you that if you don't have them, you are inadequate. And it puts a lot of stress on people. And the kids, they make the kids ask the parents, I have to have these shoes or I'm nothing. And
there may be another dimension, too, which is that when you sit still watching a cathode ray tube or a screen of some kind, it does something to you physiologically, which isn't really that healthy. I've noticed that if I watch, I unfortunately went on a Mad Men marathon not too long ago, and you can watch 50 gazillion of those in a row on Netflix, and you feel horrible afterwards, not because there's not even commercials, it's Netflix, not because of what they're trying to sell you, but because physiologically you've just been sitting on that couch having rays come into your eyes for too long.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a very Western thing as well. I think in a lot of other parts in the world, people do also still spend a lot of time outside in the field working incredibly hard. And I think that globalization really has made a lot of other countries and people unhappy. I think it's really given rise to terrorism, to discontent in a lot of different ways, because people who once were quite happy having a subsistence living, and this isn't to romanticize that in any way, but being able to see all of the things that they don't have, having outside views kind of featuring them as poor people
right.
and a poor way of living, I think has been really detrimental. And I do also see this as a part of GDP, in that you are more successful when you have more stuff and when you consume more. And if you don't do that, then somehow you don't fit into this model. So it is a little bit of going back to what are these other things that we value. And Bhutan had 9 domains originally, and when we brought it to America, they added work satisfaction simply because work here is such a huge part of American culture and the source of great discontent among many, many people in this world. And a lot of what John DeGraff and Happiness Seattle has also looked at is time management and different ways that companies and businesses can make that balance, can job sharing. I mean, some of the countries, even in Denmark, they do have kind of job sharing programs that make people a lot more satisfied with their work and being able to spend time with family and children. And mm-hmm. we would like to really be spreading this as we talk about the Happiness Initiative and bringing in many more business partners. We already have many who are going to help us launch Happiness Week, and we can talk about that later. But a lot of people are coming on board, and we would like to include as many different individuals and businesses as possible here in Santa Fe.
I want to say something, I want to add something about that, which is that the happiest and most productive countries in the world, it goes together, are those, countries in the world, are those countries who have the highest tax rates, free education,
right.
free health care, and they are the most productive. And those are the Scandinavian countries.
Right.
They rank the highest on all these indices.
Now, when you tell people that, your average American will say, well, they're a homogeneous culture, and they have a shared culture, whereas we're a heterogeneous culture, multicultural society, and we're always battling with each other because of that.
Right. People will say that, but I think the reason is, if you look at Norway, for example, the reason they're so wealthy is because of North Sea oil. Now, what did they do with their oil revenues? They set up a national trust.
Well, not
so
only
that, that money was shared. Go ahead, Mary Charlotte. Well, you know this story.
I mean, what they not only did they set up a trust, but they said, let's not take it all out at one time and have a boom. Let's gradually take the oil out and have a kind of stable wealth for many years. I don't think there's any country in the world that could have done that besides them.
Well, you know, but talking about Bhutan, too, I mean, Bhutan, when they use this measurement, they have China coming in building hydroelectric dams. But rather than saying build all over the place so we can actually have a much higher cost of living, they use this kind of happiness index to say, okay, this did increase happiness and did increase our national income, which was important, but it also really brought down a lot of the other qualities of life. Environmental degradation was enormous. So perhaps we'll just have one instead of three. And that's where they used that. And that's a little bit along the same lines of saying we can succeed and we can have this, but let's not forget these other factors that are really important. We're not here saying, you know, no more business, no more profit, nothing. Not at all. This is part of this engine that goes along. But let's do it in a way that doesn't destroy the earth we live on. Let's do it in a way so we can all live here, so that everybody can bring their level of the quality of life, quality of income, quality of friendships up
and
a little bit.
Bhutan is a living example of the ability to produce and to, in a place of happiness and in a place of preservation. They were just, they are the first nation just recently to have been declared completely organic production agriculturally. They're the first country in the world that has been able to make that claim. 100% of their agriculture is organic now. So, you know, they're using the beyond consumption measures, and they're actually showing very positive results from it. And it is a gradual process. It has to be, you know, as just the same as taking oil out of the ground can either be done all at once, and you get a boom and you get a huge bust and everything goes bad, or you just take a gradual approach and eventually things work just fine.
We're talking about the Happiness Initiative here in Santa Fe, Happiness Santa Fe, with Merle Lefkoff, Dave Rogers, and Zaylee Pollan. I feel like another part of the whole set of questions around happiness is equality, and not to be a total commie where everybody has to have exactly the same income or something like that, but terrible inequality makes people unhappy, does it not?
It makes people very unhappy.
Do you really think you're a commie because you think
Mary
that people
Charlotte.
Should have equal pay? Come on now. You're part of the problem. No.
The collapse of the global economy, which is really the impetus for this new global movement of which gross national happiness is a part of, is one of the huge issues there is the inequality that has grown over the last 20 years or so, and now it was bound to collapse. And the inequality is worse than it's ever been before. That's how Occupy Wall Street got started. That's why people are rising up against this. Here is a way to talk about how to measure the economy differently to redress, in some measure, that inequality.
Now, how do you actually institutionalize that? Let's say you start measuring things like clean air and clean water, and you start taking into account, like we talked on this show about hydraulic fracturing. So somebody fracks and the water supply is contaminated, and so that then becomes part, I mean, those externalities become part of the economy, which has to be addressed by the people who are dirtying it and all of that. But how do you, like, what would that look like? Would it be regulation, taxation?
It would be different public policy. It's a combination of economic solutions. Let's put it that way. We talk about measuring the economy differently. It isn't a subjective measure to say this is how much of the water has been contaminated. That you can objectively measure that, and you can objectively measure that and anticipate that when you're making a public policy decision about allowing some kind of environmental work to go forward that you know is going to affect the environment. But we don't put a price tag on that now. We need to put a price tag on it, and we need to have public policy decision makings tied to those new price tags.
Yeah, I think the price tag element is an important thing, especially in America, because as we move forward with happiness and a gross domestic happiness index, we are still going to be a capitalist society. That is not going to change, and we are still going to recognize things in terms of value, in terms of dollar values and intrinsic value as well. For instance, there, I think some of the ways that things can change are economic, and some of them will be people-led. For instance, right now there's a push among young people. These are middle school and high school kids that are trying to get a case into the Supreme Court to have the actual air above the United States of America regarded as a renewable resource that has actual value, that then we can actually see it that way and protect it as such, in the same way we protect our car with a car alarm because we don't want it to get stolen.
Right.
Right. So these are things that are going to evolve within, and have to evolve, I think, within citizens of America as this, and will evolve, and this is kind of what we're trying to foment with the Happiness Initiative. I think without the Happiness Initiative, I would not be terribly optimistic that that sort of attitude about our resources could evolve.
I think we also just take a lot of this for granted, and I think what the Happiness Initiative is doing is trying to quantify it, and the way we're doing it is through this happiness survey, which is online at happinesssantafe.org. We would really encourage everyone to go and to take it. It's not a perfect measure. It's not the ultimate measure that we want, but it does track these 10 domains, and it can be used if enough people come on and enough people start saying, well, actually, I do really value that, and we take those measurements and those results. We give them to policymakers here in Santa Fe, and we've had a great deal of support from the city of Santa Fe. In fact, they are naming this coming Saturday Pursuit of Happiness Day. Mayor Koss has signed a proclamation. Peter Ives will be reading that at 9:30 in the morning. And we're hoping to really expand upon that. And they have agreed to take the results from this survey and to use it in their policy-making decision. And this is the way to do it. Instead of us sitting amongst ourselves talking about how much we value living in this town, Santa Fe, that has such clean air, we are going to quantify it and say, look, this many people really value this. You need to make this part of your public policy decision making. And hopefully this will spread to cities across the nation, to states. We would love for New Mexico to become a happiness state. This is an ongoing project that we're beginning, and we're just beginning it. We're just launching it with Happiness Santa Fe Week.
Yeah. And another thing that the survey can do for an individual who takes the survey is to really begin to put them in touch with their own sense of their happiness and
right.
what they actually believe about happiness and about their own happiness. And because, if we're not willing to explore that individually, and maybe take a reassessment and revision what happiness actually means to us beyond what the television tells us happiness is supposed to be, or what we've learned growing up, or however it works, and expand that into, you know, a less only about me only approach to happiness.
Right.
That's what this survey can really put people in touch with, that as well.
Let me mention something else that's kind of unmentionable most of the time, and that's the issue of sacrifice. We do not talk about that ever anymore in America, as we know. We can't promote our happiness initiative by telling people that this might involve a kind of sacrifice that people used to take for granted in order to build community and in order to have a better life.
Examples?
Well, examples are our military now. We don't have a draft anymore. Many people think that could end war, could end these wars for sure.
If we had a draft.
If we had a draft.
Absolutely.
Right.
But there's
other
things,
too. So that's an example.
Too.
So what kind of sacrifices would we have to make? We know from the research that Dave was talking about a few minutes ago, we know that one of the things that makes human beings happier is to be generous. Acts of generosity release certain chemicals in your brain that make you feel good and make you happier. So
volunteerism
is one of those. The idea of sacrificing something that you don't need, right, in order to help the general good is something that we've lost sight of completely.
I think one example of that is in our food choices. So one of the things I was thinking about is, I mean, I love fish, and the oceans are dying, and the fish are being overfished, and what would it mean to have a right relationship to fish? Like, how often should each one of us be eating fish every week, or not eating it at all, or not eating it for a while? Because I think what happens in a kind of consumer society is the relationship between your actions and the greater whole are really hard to suss out.
Right, they are. And for example, one of the ways you can help the fish is to stop buying water in plastic bottles.
For example.
Because that plastic gets into the ocean, and it's a huge problem. Another way to think about this, Mary Charlotte, is to think about all those connections. And that requires a shift in the way you think about the world. And that's one of the things we're hoping that the survey will stimulate, the activities that we have during Sustainable Happiness Week are going to stimulate, is a different way on an individual basis of truly thinking about this.
There's another piece of it, too, which is kind of paradoxical, which is in order to have a different society that's based on a happiness paradigm, you kind of have to face some big unhappinesses right now, like, for example, the death of the ocean, or the you know, air pollution, or tremendous inequality or exploitation of laborers in this country and other countries.
Absolutely.
Which are tremendously unhappy things that we're complicit in and that nobody really likes to look at and nobody likes to be a victim of. But in order to have happiness, you got to look at all of that misery.
Yeah, honesty is a vital ingredient in happiness, whether it's just your personal life or in a society. You're absolutely right. And it's the baseline almost of it.
And if we act out of fear, Mary Charlotte, because we're in such deep despair, that's not going to help. And that's another thing we think about too. If we act out of a sense of love and compassion and generosity, then maybe we can at least begin to tip the balance in these problems.
We're talking about Happiness Santa Fe, and so the Happiness Santa Fe Initiative Sustainable Happiness Week is April 13th to 21st. That's this coming week. It's coming right up. So what's actually going to be happening?
Well, we launch at the Farmers Market, and we chose that very consciously. They're really a wonderful, very supportive organization and an incredible treasure here to Santa Fe that promotes small businesses, good food, community building as a community resource. So we launch on the 13th, and there will be every single day we have different events. at the event proper. We hope everybody comes, volunteers. Jennifer Esperanza will be there taking photos. We're going to be asking people what happiness is. We have youth who will also be doing video productions throughout the week. We will be discussing on Sunday presentation at Journey, free films. Mountain Kids is doing a hike for kids and families, different lectures. Do you all want to
we're going to show a great film about happiness called Happy. Which is it Tuesday?
That's Tuesday evening at CCA, followed by a chocolate tasting. Chocolate is also proven to increase endorphins and bring happiness. And I think that we need to really include all of these elements. I mean, this week is really, it's fun, and some of it will be a little silly. We're having a big parade on Friday night starting at the plaza at 5:30 p.m. We hope everyone will come. Walking up to the rail yard, again, Eric and Elise Gent, such treasures in this community, and the rail yard performance space will be used as a gathering to really celebrate. We're calling it Arts and Happiness Day that Friday. A lot of family-friendly events. But what we're really trying to do is plant a seed and start a conversation and get people to take the survey and to really start thinking about this and having fun as well in this week.
Yeah, and we've designed these events to be as inclusive as possible for the entire community here. All sides, all citizens are more than welcome. Families, many of these are family-friendly, virtually everyone, and virtually every one of these events, no matter what, is going on, whether it's a film or the parade or whether there's food offered or not. These are all free events. There's no admission charge for... there's a couple of things that have admission charge to get into
the Children's
institution.
Museum. And
right. But virtually every single event is free and open to the public. And, you know, we do it that way because free is fun. Free makes people happy, too.
and we also know that if you can't participate in some of these events, all of which are listed on the website, happinesssantafe.org, go there, take the survey, see the events. We encourage other people to do what we're calling happiness happenings, and this is to do spontaneous acts of happiness. We're encouraging performers to go into elder homes, places of discontent perhaps, the unemployment office, and to bring some joy, spontaneous concerts, music, flash mobs of dance. But as I was going to say, if you can't, this is an ongoing effort. Again, we're using this week also as a media production to bring people in, to open the conversation, to start it. And this is going to be ongoing. We want Santa Fe really to be at the forefront in this entire country, along with Seattle, some other places. Vermont has been very active, Eau Claire, Wisconsin, to really start encouraging other cities to do exactly the same. We encourage your ideas, your participation, and really volunteerism.
Mary Charlotte, I'm remembering you started out by saying that this has to do with a sense of values and a shift in values. And it reminded me when David was talking about all these free events, I started thinking about why in our culture now do we only value things that have a price tag? That's where we put our value. And when are we going to start valuing generosity, exchange for free? Why is that not a very high value?
You know, I think that if you look at this country and it's measured, we are a very generous country. People give a lot to charity, people help their neighbors. Those things are already there, but they're sort of like, they're not valued in the economy. They're not valued in gross domestic product. We do them anyway. And for those things to be part of our society rather than kind of going against the dominant capitalist values of society, I think is a really big conversation.
It is. That's our next conversation, our next big conversation.
One thing, and I don't know how much of a role this plays, but one thing that has also been documented is people just get happier as they get older. All decrepitude aside, people in their 40s and 50s are happier than people in their 20s for a number of reasons. One of them is your lives tend to be more settled and you've kind of figured things out. And also people's expectations are not maybe as high as they were when they felt like they needed to accomplish everything or whatever. And so can you control for that on your survey?
That's an interesting question. I wonder if the scientists are doing that. but you've nailed it. It's because the idea of unlimited ambition, that's a kind of growth too, has finally been reaching a realistic plateau. And it makes people more comfortable and more comfortable with, and hopefully giving more time again to their families and to their friends and to their communities. And that's why older people volunteer a lot.
I think there's another dimension here which is important to talk about. A lot of people who aren't spending enough time with their families, it's not because they don't want to, it's because the economy prevents them from doing so.
Yes. That's exactly right.
I mean, that's a lot about time management. And when John DeGraff was here, and I know he's spoken on your show twice before, and just we've had a really wonderful response to hearing him speak here, he gave an example of a company where they had offered Fridays off. Do you want more pay or do you want time off? And in the end, even if people fight against it at first, just realizing the value, well, gosh, I spent time with my family. We had picnics. We bonded in ways we didn't. And if we can try to kind of encourage that in businesses and for all of us to be thinking about the way we spend time with our family, with our friends, with our community, I think if we plant any seeds at all, this will be incredibly valuable.
Well, we
can learn from children. We've been in touch also with the superintendent of schools here, and Joel really got it. He said, as we were talking, he said, you know, this is a teaching moment for children. And we know from the research that children, and there's very definitive research about this, children are happiest when they are out of doors playing with their friends, period, across all cultures. Out of doors, in nature, with their friends. And wouldn't it be lovely if adults could experience the same level of happiness that children do out of doors, with their family, with their friends? Because that's a really profound level of happiness in the research.
And it's interesting, too, because a lot of kids, if you ask them what they want an Xbox, right? Or they want whatever the latest gadget is. And it doesn't necessarily make them happier, but they think it does, and therefore you have to start dealing with questions of addiction, because what those gadgets do is they feed into children's kind of addictive tendencies.
But that's also this idea of media. I mean, a child is not born wanting an Xbox. They are brought up. I mean, my son wants to play. And after that, their friends have these Xboxes. The TV tells them that they'll be happier if they have them, and then they think, well, gosh, I need them. But again, this is all media feeding you these images. And
but it's not just that. When they go over to their friend's house and they play with it, it really, really is fun, because those things are designed by psychologists who've been paid untold millions and billions of dollars every year to figure out what will draw kids in and keep them there.
Absolutely. Oh, there are millions of dollars spent on advertising across the board. I mean, from the food that they should eat, to the crunchy chocolate cereals in the morning, to video games, and of course they're fun. And we can't really go out and say nobody should be doing any of this. It's really bringing in other factors as well, and really putting a value, especially for those of us who live in this place where we have access to outdoors and clean air, and really encouraging kids to do that. How can they know that there is also great value in that if we don't give them that experience?
Right.
Yeah, and that's, you know, I think there's an underlying element to the happiness, the gross domestic happiness index, and that is that it foments, it has to, in order to succeed, it has to foment a true paradigm shift in how people think and how people regard their lives. And that's the ultimate goal, is to foment a paradigm shift into an expanded way of thinking, where you're not going to believe everything that consumer advertising tells you, because that's not going to go away. You know, we can pretty much figure that one.
Right.
But to make them able to make choices and to understand there are choices, even, you know, I don't know that we even know that right now.
We started out this conversation, Merle was talking about Bretton Woods and that whole thing, and You were talking before we went on the air about how we need a Bretton Woods 2.
Yes. I really think that this is kind of the beginnings, this idea that's happening all over the world now on a global level, and we're bringing it home to the local level. the idea that Bretton Woods has run its course and, in fact, may be out of control, as Zaylee said, this is where GDP was first put into place, so that we need a Bretton Woods too. And this would be a very large negotiation among countries of the world to think about what does it mean in today's world where we're promoting democracy and transition to democracy all over the world. What does this mean in terms of the economies that would assure our democracies? Because our democracies in many of our countries are also in trouble because of the economic collapse.
What's interesting also is that if such a thing were to happen and that paradigm shift could really take hold, our chances of surviving ourselves would probably be increased. If you start valuing clean water and clean air.
Of course. This is so much tied to global climate change. I think Zaylee mentioned it earlier. Dave, I think you might have mentioned it as well. This is so closely tied to global climate change, because why do we have global warming and global climate change? It's because of the rape of our natural resources all over the world.
It's connected to everything, really. It's connected to poverty. It's connected to conflict. I mean, we really see this, and I think it's also why we're trying to bring in so many different organizations that are working towards similar issues in terms of clean air, water, food, community building, that if we could have this across the country and bring all of these people who are working in disparate elements and different work but for similar results, bring them together under this umbrella and say, this is GDP is the cause, so let's think of answers together and let's move forward. But let's look at this as the root of so many of these ills. It's the way we measure things.
Let's talk for a moment about business. I imagine that when you talk about this paradigm shift and shifting the economy, that you get some pushback from sort of the conservative business community, or not. What happens?
Well, I certainly hope we don't, because we are very supportive of businesses, but really want to emphasize sustainable businesses, green businesses, businesses that are really trying to develop cleaner, more equitable, fair business practices in this country. We can't really afford not to. I mean, when we talk about it on a global or even a national level, we talk about subsidies to large agribusiness. If local organic farmers had the same kind of subsidies as larger soy corn farmers, this would really show our priority, and this would really expand.
Yeah.
I mean, if solar energy got the kind of subsidies that nuclear energy got,
or fossil fuels,
then this would really take off. So what we're saying is, yes, let's support businesses. Let's support a different kind of business that this country needs right now. Let's put our money where those values are again. Let's not subsidize these businesses and these industries that are destroying the planet, because there are enough people, certainly here in Santa Fe and around the country, around the world, who are trying to really start different business practices, and they need our support in many, many different ways.
There are also, I mean, the questions of externalities, which we've talked about a little bit. There are economic models where if you make a plastic water bottle, you are responsible for its ecological footprint. So you basically can't just throw it into the ocean or not think about it. You are responsible for that bottle and for what it does. And if every company that made stuff were responsible for the cradle to grave of that product that they made, there'd be a huge upsurge in innovation of renewable products or biodegradable products or whatever.
Can I just take this opportunity to plug for Annie Leonard and her small video, Story of Stuff, which is just a wonderful educational
yes.
tool about the start-to-end process. And if more people knew about that, knew what goes into producing these things and what happens afterwards, I think this would really help with this huge shift in consciousness and in values. I think we really need to know where they come from, where they go, and how we can do it differently.
The Story of Stuff, I think it's thestoryofstuff.com, or so you can Google The Story of Stuff and you will find it. It's an amazing
Brilliant.
Little animated piece that you can watch on YouTube.
And The Story of Water, and The Story of, yeah, she has several of those.
Yeah.
We have wonderful businesses, small businesses, which is, as we know, where most new jobs come from. They come from small businesses that are green, that are looking for the kind of sustainability that you guys are talking about. And We were invited by the Green Chamber of Commerce, which is one of the most exciting, most innovative, and far-reaching groups now in Santa Fe, to talk about happiness. Santa Fe, we got a huge reception. Dave, you were there.
Mm-hmm. It was full. It was at Vanessi, and that place was packed, and a lot of enthusiasm. My friend and I were sitting at a table with the publishers of Greenfire Times when Merle was speaking, literally, and we're friends, and actually they were trying to get her to come to work for him. And in the middle of Merle's presentation, Anna got up and whispered something to her friend, the two people that have the Greenfire Times, kind of talked among themselves, and then she got up and went to the microphone and announced that they were going to give the Happiness Santa Fe a free quarter-page ad.
Nice.
And so they did that, and they wound up also giving us a full-page article in the and a nice couple of nice photographs of the Prime Minister of Bhutan. And
we've had a lot of support across the city, really. I mean, New Mexico Bank and Trust was one of the first, really, to support us. Molly Sturgis, Little Globe. We
Chocolate Smith, C.G. Higgins Chocolates, the CCA, Sense Clothing, our good friend Robin there, and La Montanita, Journey Santa Fe, the Green Chamber of Commerce, and so on. There's an awful lot of them that are on board.
And we hope for many more. Again, we're really, really starting this outreach, but these are people who initially saw the vision and said, yes, we believe in this. We're working toward the same thing. Let me help you go along. I mean, it should be said that this is really primarily volunteer-driven, and we hope that it will really get legs and be able to go as far as possible, but we want continued support.
And as we talked about, I think it was just yesterday, with nuclear weapons, this isn't a political issue. This is an issue that cuts across all political, social, racial, demographic, age
groups. Thank you for noting that. It absolutely is.
Yeah. It's really a survival issue rather than political. And if it ever becomes political, or gets to, you know, a place where I think people are beginning to politicize it, I'm certain that organizers will do our best to put a stop to that nonsense, because that's utterly counterproductive. And the only reason that could happen would happen is because people are becoming afraid of it, those who have a vested interest in keeping this from actually expanding.
And as Merle had noted before, I mean, it's not that we don't recognize kind of just the difficulties in the world. I mean, you and I have spoken about war and trauma several times. Merle knows war intimately as well. What we're saying is that this is a different approach to this. This is almost a more optimistic approach. This is saying there are things that can be done. Let's really start looking at that. Let's really start looking at the things we value and how to turn the tables and how to take an approach that can really bring joy and that can remind us of the value in our lives and the value in our community and each other.
There isn't a lot of energy in despair. In order for social change to happen, which is what we're talking about here, we're talking about big social change at the systems level, is what we're talking about. You've got to have hope, joy, happiness, and that gives you the energy to make the change.
And a little bit of anger doesn't hurt either. Sustainable Happiness Week is April 13th to 21st. It's an initiative of the Center for Emergent Diplomacy, of which Merle Lefkoff is the founder and president. Dave Rogers and Zaylee Pollan are coordinating Happiness Santa Fe. And if you would like more information, ladies and gentlemen, you can go to happinesssantafe.org. You can also call 505-699-1662. And you can write to happinesssantafe@gmail.com. And so I am looking forward to it. And thank you all for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you.
My pleasure.
I hope everyone comes out. And please come and volunteer.
Excellent.